September 17, 2011, New York City. The occupation begins. A group of people assemble in Zuccotti Park, not far from Wall Street. They come from many different places. They're brought together by a shared sense that the forces of global capital are destroying the lives of working people everywhere. And the time has come to speak out for the 99%. An encampment comes to life. A city within a city. A peaceful democracy based on consensus. In this city is a free kitchen, a library, clothing, medical attention, and space to discuss how we can change the world. 2 months later, on November 22nd, the encampment is destroyed by police. January 1871, the city of Paris is under siege. All men capable of bearing arms are enrolled in the National Guard. The gap between rich and poor widens still further. The working people are starving. They fight heroically to defend their city, but it soon becomes clear that the government and the generals do not have their interests at heart. So the workers decide to take control of their city and form a progressive democratic assembly of the people. Thus begins the first great occupation in modern history.
Valley. This is Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman. We have a special guest today, artist and professor Zoe Bailoff. You have just been listening to sound from her 2012 street theater project in New York City, where she brought a group of activists and artists together to perform The Days of the Commune, a play by Bertolt Brecht during the Occupy Wall Street protests in New York City. Zoe describes herself as an artist, filmmaker, and rootless cosmopolitan based in New York. She aims to make art that both entertains and provokes discussion, and we will have a discussion today. Welcome Zoe Bailoff to Body Politic.
Hi, it's great to be here.
It's so good to have you. We are also joined today by Dr. Peter Schweppe, an assistant professor of German studies and history here in the Gallatin Valley at Montana State University. He has taught courses such as Nazi art and propaganda and modern Germany, the rise of fascism, and advanced German, dramatic forms and cultures. We invited him to participate in today's discussion because so many of his areas of interest and expertise intersect with the themes in Zoe's work. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Thank you.
Finally, we are joined in our discussion by Bird Williams, an artist, poet, and author who is a veteran of The Sun magazine, worked in publishing at Duke University and UNC Chapel Hill, served as an editor for Social Text, and concentrates on diversity and cultural studies. Welcome, Bird.
Good to be here.
Oh, good to have you. I'm your host, Dr. Nurse Nancy. Our producer, Robin Fly, has worked on Zoe's films in the past, so we'll bring in her into the discussion too. And Zoe, we're excited to get to your recent project, Parade of the Old New, and your work in progress, The Song of the Essential Worker. But we wanted to begin with some of your earlier pieces. We just heard a clip from Days of the Commune, which is based on a play by Bertolt Brecht. Almost all of your work that we will talk about today references or was inspired in some way by Brecht. Would you please remind listeners who Brecht was and tell us why you find him so important and how his life and work are relevant in today's world?
That's a really good question. Like, why should we be like what's the word, a rising, for, why should we rise from the dead, some old German guy who was born in 1898 or whatever in Augsburg. That's a really good question. I think he and a number of artists around him were doing something that I feel we have lost in our century, which was about making critical art that was also for people, that was also accessible. The idea of making something that was both radical and popular. And I think he, with his particular focus on inequality, mm-hmm. and the fact that he had to deal in his lifetime with the worst kind of fascism, gives us perhaps some lead, some starting points to talk about our work. So I think while not wanting to kind of slavishly recreate what he did, I do think he's like a structure to build on. The Commune Project was the first project that I did kind of inspired by Brecht's work. And I had been thinking, this was 2008, 2009, the time of the Great Recession. And people were like being evicted from their homes. And, you know, times were tough. And I was thinking about artists that had dealt with income inequality. And I was thinking about Brecht, who, you know, was writing during the Great Depression in the early 30s and late 20s in Germany, which was a terrible, terrible time. Maybe he could give us some pointers. And I was also interested in the fact that actually he spent time in America in the 40s. And so he was not a stranger to this country. So I was wondering, like, what pointers can he offer us? So I started to think and go back to his work. I mean, I knew it kind of superficially. I mean, I'd seen the Threepenny Opera and so on, but I didn't know his work in any kind of depth. So I was kind of reading and exploring. And at that moment was when the Occupy Wall Street encampment started in September 2011, very near where I live. And I was like, these people are doing something right now, and I just have to get down there. And I spent some time, I never camped out, you know, I was not exactly part of that, but I just spent time there listening, watching, observing, actually drawing, and just thinking about how this, in a sense, it was theater. These people didn't take over the whole city, but in one city block, they kind of created a kind of model of a city where things would be shared, things would be free, there would be free medical help, there was food pantries, there were libraries. It was like a city in miniature, and it was kind of a model, almost like theater, like 24-hour theater, of what a different kind of city could be. And it was during that time, just spending time there, my mind went back to, I had this image in my head, and it's actually a lithograph, I thought it was a drawing by Manet, of the end of the Commune, the Paris Commune of 1871. Mm-hmm. When ultimately thousands of people were massacred. Mm. Those people took over their whole city to form a different proletarian democratic city with all kinds of interesting rights, education, votes for women. I mean, it was super interesting. And it was crushed in 3 months. And so I was interested in thinking about that as a model. And at the same time, I was reading Brecht, and I still remember this. I was sitting on a train, and I read that he had written this play, The Days of the Commune, which kind of explicates the story of the Commune, both from the point of view of the working people, and also from, you know, the masters of global capital, which was the French government, the banks, and so on. And I went, oh my God. It was like one of those things where I had the entire idea all together. Like, we have to perform this on the street in public. It was just like, and then I went, oh shit. Like, how do I do this? Like, I don't have funding. I've never done anything like this before. I'm a complete stranger to street theater. How do I get people? I was like, but it was one of those thoughts that you can't unthink. Like, if you unthink it, then you're a coward, you know? So I rushed back to New York. I grabbed a copy of the play. I read it and I was like, shit, I have to do this. As I say, it would just be cowardice to back out. And so I did. And people, it was, I mean, I could start whole stories on that. Shall I continue?
Well, I'd love to hear more, but I also want to say, you know, you were talking about that Brecht had spent time in America, and you just used the word model several times. And I'd actually like to play a clip from your film, A Model Family in a Model Home, which starts out with our playwright Brecht being questioned by the House Un-American Activities Committee. Why don't we hear that and talk a little more? Is that okay?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Great.
Between the 20th and 30th of October 1947, the Committee on Un-American Activities of the House of Representatives held some, quote, hearings regarding the communist infiltration of the motion picture industry, unquote. One group of witnesses spoke against communism and named persons in Hollywood whom they regarded as communists. The other pleaded the Fifth Amendment and maintained that the investigation was improper. The witness who stood furthest apart from the others was Bertolt Brecht, whose testimony you are now about to hear.
Now, Mr. Brecht, what is your occupation?
I am a playwright and a poet.
Playwright and poet?
Yes.
Were you ever employed in the motion picture industry?
Yeah. I sold a story to a Hollywood firm. Hangman also died, but I did not write the screenplay myself. I'm not a professional screenplay writer. I wrote another story for a Hollywood firm, but that story was not produced.
Driven from his home in Berlin by the Nazis, Bertolt Brecht arrived in Los Angeles on July 21st, 1941. While war rages across Europe and the Soviet Union, he finds himself in the most advanced outpost of capitalism. He writes a poem about it.
In hell too, there are, I have no doubt, these luxuriant gardens with flowers as big as trees, which of course with a unhesitatingly, if not nourished with very expensive water and fruit markets with great heaps of fruit, albeit having neither smell nor taste, and endless processions of cars, lighter than their own shadows, faster than mad thoughts, gleaming vehicles in which cheerful-looking people come from nowhere and are nowhere bound. And houses built for happy people, therefore standing empty, even when lived in. The houses in hell, too, are not all ugly. But the fear of being thrown onto the street wears down the inhabitants of the villas no less than the inhabitants of the shanty towns.
After the HUAC hearings were over, Brecht left the United States forever, with many projects still unfinished, including 50 film treatments. Now it is up to us to begin the work of reconstruction. 1941, Searching for a subject that everyone understands, Brecht avidly reads Life magazine.
So, Zoe, you reconstructed a project that Brecht started called A Model Family in a Model Home. Could you talk about how Brecht got that idea for the project and then what you've done with the idea and why?
Absolutely. This actually, I should say, is one of a trilogy of films that I made, each of which the starting point was a film that was proposed but never realized by a radical artist. So I was kind of interested in this idea that there is, as well as an archive of films, there's an archive of films that are not yet. I think of them as potential films, but might be really interesting to pick up. And as I say, ideas waiting to be realized that maybe are before their time. So Brecht's idea, I was really interested reading about Brecht in America and in Hollywood. He had just tons of ideas for films that were never realized. And there was one tiny sketch. I mean, it's a few lines that he wrote for a film called A Model Family in a Model Home. And interestingly, it's based on an actual story that was in Life magazine. And the story is sort of fascinating. In fact, I did so much research into this story. I think I know more about it than he did. because it's a story about a family. There was a competition for Ohio's most typical farm family. And the winners would win a week in a model home at the Ohio State Fair. This is 1941. And there was only, unfortunately, one drawback, which was that the house was open to the public 12 hours a day. Goodness. So it was just mobbed with people while this poor family was trying to like cook dinner or whatever. People were ogling them, staring in the window, rampaging through their bedrooms. And Life had hired the well-known photographer Alfred Eisenstadt to photograph it. And there's a couple of crazy pictures in Life magazine. But I was lucky enough to get to the archive of Life where there was 100 crazy pictures. So the story itself is kind of marvelous. And the idea of Brecht kind of taking on the American working class family I thought was kind of wonderful and had much potential. And again, I was thinking this was coming out of the Great Recession about the problem of the American home and home ownership. And this was kind of a jumping off point for me to think about how I could take that story forward.
It is a crazy story. This is Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman 95.9. FM. Our guest today is artist and filmmaker Zoe Bailoff. We're talking about her past and present projects, and we are joined in this discussion by Dr. Peter Schweppe, Bird Williams, and Robin Fly. Zoe, let's talk a little bit about your film Exile, which again features Bertolt Brecht, this time along with his friend the philosopher Walter Benjamin. In the 1930s, they spent time together in exile from Nazi Germany, and your film imagines that they are still in exile in 2017 in New York City. You say that they are still doing what they always did, showing us how society works with whatever they have at hand, words, images, and suggestions on how to tell the truth in a world full of lies. This film makes connections between fascism in New York in the 1930s and its manifestation in the Trump era. I would love to hear more about the film's characters briefly and what they offer us. And I know that Peter has some questions as well.
This is my friend, Walter Benjamin. He's a writer and a philosopher. He was born in Berlin, 1892, and he died on 26th of September, 1940, in the Spanish border town of Portsmouth. This is not quite true. He committed suicide. I only found out later when I arrived in America. We were both refugees, fleeing from Nazi Germany. But all that is in the past.
And this is my friend, Bert Brecht. He was born in Augsburg in 1898 and died in East Berlin in 1956. He is a playwright and poet. We met through my girlfriend, Aja Lapkis. She was working with Brecht on his theater productions. He had many exciting new ideas. I decided to write about them. Later, when we were forced into exile, I often stayed with the whole Brecht family in Denmark. You don't believe us. You don't think we can pull it off.
Refugees look different today. Times change, so we change too. He's black, I'm Iranian, so what? I like that expression. I learned it in America. There is no German for so what.
Hi Zoe, this is Peter. And I just first of all wanted to commend you on such a wonderful project. I loved watching it. And I guess one of the questions I have is, what is it about Benjamin and Brecht that inspired you to create this project? And in particular, I love the way that you kind of used history as a model, in particular the now time of Benjamin. And I'd love to hear anything you have to say about how this project came into being.
How it came into being is kind of simple, actually. I mean, apart from the fact that Brecht and Benjamin, I consider my comrades, you know, I have known them forever, especially Benjamin. But in 2017, I was invited to take part in an exhibition called Benjamin and Brecht Thinking in Extremes, which was at the Akademie der Künste in Berlin. And it was organized by the Benjamin Brecht Archive. And it was largely an archival show of their artifacts, texts, whatever. I mean, it was kind of gorgeous. They had, for example, I just have to tell you this, they had the first draft of Benjamin's work of art in the Age of Mechanical Reproduction, which, did you know, was written on writing stationery that advertised Pellegrino. It's quite adorable. And beautiful, like, film, Brecht's little film of Manis Man. It was just gorgeous. But they also invited several contemporary artists to make work to complement the archival work. And I actually got this invitation, like, the day, well, I'd heard about it, and I wasn't very sure what to do. And then I got the final invitation. Yes, we have the money. Let's go ahead. The day after Trump was elected, and I was kind of in shell shock. And I just realized at that moment, everything I did had to deal with today. I mean, otherwise, I would not be true to them at all. Like, why go back into the past when it's happening? The past is happening right here and now. And so I really felt it was imperative to bring them into my world and where I live today, and see if any of, test them out, like, test it out, see if their thinking can help us with what we are dealing with in America. And that had to do, and I don't know how apparent it is on the radio, it's very clear when you see the film, Brecht is played by an Iranian actor. And I did that specifically because at that time, Trump had just issued his first travel ban. So Iranians were not able to come to the United States. And, you know, Iran has such a rich culture of cinema and theater and whatever, that I thought, like, Iranians in America were being called, like, enemy aliens. I mean, and that's what Brecht was called. And so I felt like this was who he was now. Unfortunately, I really, in the end, wanted an actor from Iran, from Tehran. And Trump was a travel ban. So actually getting someone from Tehran was incredibly nerve-wracking. I remember standing at the airport at JFK when he was supposed to come with a little sign for him, you know, and I kept looking at my watch, like, will he get through? He had a green card, so in the end he did, but we were never very sure till like the moment I saw him. And Benjamin is played by an African-American actor. It's not an exact translation, nor could it be, but I felt like Benjamin was Jewish and that's why he was persecuted. And today, I mean, Black people have to deal every day with systematic racism. And although it's not exactly the same thing, it's not unrelated. So I felt like they could represent them in our world.
We have a few more minutes left in this last half hour. Bird, I'm wondering if you have any questions for Zoe right now, and we'll have plenty of time to talk in the next half hour.
I'm a poet, and so as I looked at your work and as I thought about why you chose Brecht, I jumped to Edna St. Vincent Millay's sonnet she wrote after Sacco and Vanzetti were killed, executed. And so I started thinking about history, you know, when you have the attempts to whitewash it, you know, we're not Nazis, we're neo-Nazis. We're Christians, but we're neo-Christians and we're setting up gallows outside the people's house, you know? And so I was thinking about, you know, her anguish as she wrote this sonnet, you know, read, and it opens right after the execution, read history, so learn your place in time. And so as I was looking at your work, that's what I was thinking about. And then what really struck me is the whole media saturation. And so you have this veneer of respectability, I guess, maybe the right word for, you know, Richard Spencer. He's not leading a hate group. He's leading, what is he calling it? A think tank, you know? And so I was thinking about the whole, you know, because we're saturated by all this media, we have this new president who is all about the sound bites and controlling the narrative. And so I was really thinking about all those things as I looked at your work.
Well, let's come back in the next half hour and talk more about this. You've been listening to Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM. Dr. Peter Schweppe, Bird Williams, producer Robin Fly, and I, Dr. Nurse Nancy, have been talking with artist and filmmaker Zoe Bailoff about her body of work. Join us in the next half hour as we turn our attention to Zoe's recent, highly acclaimed epic panorama painting, Parade of the Old New, as well as her work in progress, Song of the Essential Worker.
If Brecht wrote the Song of Supply and Demand today, it might go like this.
Who lends money for houses? Who lends money to build those houses? The people need homes. If I lend low to buyers and builders, then I drive demand up. Even those who can't afford it will receive a mortgage. For me, their mortgages will turn a profit. What is a mortgage, actually?